Hey guys, we're back. It's a goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 52.
Everybody, welcome back. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel tells from New Orleans, episode 52. Jeff, you sounded weird on that intro. I mean, I know that we're very proud of the French, but that was a nice tribute.
Well, my last name is Duville.
That's right.
So, what do you expect?
Actually, folks, we had our very first guest intro in our 52 episodes. We've got Alain with us. And how do you pronounce your last name, Alain?
Baudry.
Baudry. We have Alain Baudry with us. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's awesome.
Alain and I work at the same organization, and I got to say, Alain, I'll just tell you on air, you're my favorite person there.
And thank you. Don't tell anyone else. Please.
And it makes my day seeing you.
You just made my day too.
Sometimes I'm super busy and short and abrupt, but it's always a pleasure, for sure. And I don't know that much about you. You know, we haven't really ever sat down and shot the shit, except to say that I think you mentioned to me that you've had a couple of different lives in New Orleans, and that's really intriguing to me. So you said you moved here about 5 years ago, right?
I came back here 5 years ago with a band, a French band, just to play some music and study music with local musicians, because I'm in love with that town's music, food, and you know, that town in general. And after 3 days, I met my wife. So,
are you serious?
The woman that is my wife here.
How did you guys meet?
Oh, it's such a cliche. I met my wife on Frenchman Street at La Maison.
Of course.
Your third day here.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, because it was the first day I was back since 2000, since March 2000. Because I used to live in New Orleans between 98 and 2000.
Okay.
Well, let's go back to that. Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah. So that was my first return. So it was very emotional.
And so why did you move here in 98?
The music. Yeah. The music. Yeah. Yeah.
And did you have a gig, or you just wanted to come?
Well, I was gigging in France. Yeah. I met this American musician. I'm a drummer.
Yeah.
And
which musician?
His name is Brian Lee. He used to play on.
Brian Lee in the Jump Street Five?
Yes.
Right.
You know, yeah. And in 97, he came to France, and I opened for him with one of my French band.
Okay.
We did a 2.5 months tour with them. It was awesome, because everybody got along. And at the end of the tour, he said, next year I'm coming back. I'm not bringing my American musician. I don't need them. You can do the work. Like that, I don't have to pay for the tickets.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Nice.
And because we were blues lovers, you know, a French band. And then the year after, in 98, he came back for a tour.
Mm.
And we did a European tour. Then we went to Brazil with them in São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the cable. Sorry.
Yeah.
And while I was in Brazil, a German band asked me to be their drummer, but I wanted to play with Brian, because there was an option to move to New Orleans. And I asked him, you know, can I come with you to New Orleans? And he said, yeah. It was April, and he said, you're coming in August. So I left everything, my jobs, my bands, my apartments, my family, and I moved to New Orleans, not knowing for how long.
Right.
And I stayed 2 years.
Nice.
No, a little bit more. Yeah, 2 years and a half.
And how did that go, that first stint? Were you playing?
It was a big shock, because I was this, you know, little French drummer, white dude from Bordeaux, doing, you know, local and national gigs. And then I end up in New Orleans where you know, the quality is amazing. And
a lot of good drummers.
Yeah, are you kidding me? That was a shame to sit on the drums. But you don't play the same, you know? Once you eat the food, breathe the air, you know, talk the language, I was like, oh, is it me playing right now? You know, it takes you to a different level, and playing with those musicians too.
Sure.
And they were very welcoming, and it was awesome. It was really awesome. until I started to play with the, you know, alcohol and drugs, because you think you're better than all that. And you know, I was this kid. I was 27.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, sex and drugs and rock and roll. This is my life.
Oh, that was you.
No.
No.
No. No. No. I'm a sweet guy.
Right.
And he was stronger than me. It almost destroyed me. But
is that right?
But I stopped early enough. But it was great.
Did it take you leaving New Orleans to stop?
No, I stopped at one point because I was losing my mind.
Yep.
And luckily, I found, you know, the expression, you meet the devil, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was me. You know, I looked in the mirror. I was like, what's going on here? So I just stopped everything.
And you were able to just stop on your own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I left, you know. Anyway, the woman I was living with was doing the same shit as me.
So you just had to
leave. So I just took my drums and my suitcase and I went in a hotel and
And
I cried for 2 months. Because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
And then I played some music purely for 6 months. I only did music, what I came from. And one day I felt like, okay, now I can go.
Yep.
And it was tiring. I was illegal.
Yeah, it was.
It was before Katrina. You could just come here. Because I pretended I lost my passport, so I had a passport made again, so it was clean, brand new, you know. I played the stupid Frenchman card every time I was arrested, and you know, I was stopped. Police would stop me with my girlfriend at the time, car, even if I was on my own, and they were like, and I would say, oh, I am sorry, you know, I don't have my papers.
So you play
and they were like, get the fuck out of here.
You see the accent?
The accent
gets a little bit more.
Yeah, I was just playing stupid. And
sure.
It worked several times.
It did,
several
really, times. Yeah.
I don't understand.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, get out. you know, they were like, this is going to be a long.
Well, it's funny. It's funny that you say that because that's something that we don't talk about that much on the It's Good Life Babe.com Jeffrey Charles Tales from New Orleans podcast. Is that this town has some teeth, and if you're not careful, it'll sink its teeth into you like really quickly because sometimes people project. I'm not saying this is what happened to you, but they get an image of New Orleans maybe from. That's maybe a little distorted, you know, and arrive with a set of expectations about freedom and about the laxity of rules and regulations and things of that nature, and that everything is on the table all the time. And I've seen it happen more than once, what you're describing, that people come in and then they just kind of go overboard and it's a little too much too soon and then, you know. They're gone. One guy I knew wound up in a cornfield in North Dakota. It's kind of a famous... Yeah. He was like... No, I'm serious. I was living on Cleveland Avenue. He came to New Orleans from L.A. He was kind of a typical L.A. guy. He's like dropping names constantly. You know, he had the whole L.A. shtick. And he had to speak to me all the time because he had that kind of egomania about him. So I would come downstairs, and he's like, hey, Jeff, listen, man, I'm going to be at the track today, probably all day. And look, man, I got a dime on this horse, and it's going to be great. And look, man, everything's going to be awesome. Totally so love you, man. You're great. Out. See you later. Like that. And it was like every day like that until suddenly he was like, listen, Jeff, I need you to do me a favor. Everything that I have... especially my special tie that I love. It's my favorite tie in the world. I need you to take, it's all in my microwave oven in my apartment upstairs. I need you to get my microwave, put it in a box. I've already filled out the FedEx thing. It's going to North Dakota. I'm going to pick corn with my dad.
Don't grab the stuff out of the microwave. Pack the whole microwave.
No, it was already packed and ready to go.
I see.
But he had his tie in it and he was like, look, man, just don't, you can wear the tie, but just make sure the tie is in there. So I packed it
it's
up.
It's a way to not lose it.
Yeah, shipped it to this guy in North Dakota. Jeez. And that's the last time I saw him.
Yeah.
You know,
I like
but
that
I mean,
he uses a microwave in lieu of like a suitcase. Or,
This exactly. dude was going to the track in his robe.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He had the robe on, you know, and the chest hair down to here, you know, and he's like, he had his slippers on. And he would just leave from Cleveland Avenue in Carrollton and, like, get in a United cab and go to the racetrack, yeah. you know.
And he's got his toiletries in his toaster oven.
Yeah, it was like a toothbrush, you know, and some toothpaste and a tie. You know, maybe a sweater.
But, you know, the thing is, I was, at that time, I started on Bourbon Street and in the French Quarter.
Yeah.
Because it was way cleaner than now.
Right, right.
Even if it was dirty.
Right.
It was. Yeah. It's never clean. Yeah. But can you imagine? It was in '98. It was way cleaner than now.
It's the frightening bands, now.
Man, the bands know? That were playing there. Yeah. It was amazing. Big D that played with John Cleary would play after me.
Right.
I mean, the musicians that I met, you know, on Bourbon Streets, you know, on Storyville District, all those clubs, people would play on the streets.
Sure.
And you know, in between big gigs, they would come take some money. But once you're stuck on Bourbon Street, it's hard to not, because it's 5-6 days a week and it's good money.
Yeah.
And I ended up just doing that. And when you do like, I would sometimes do an afternoon gig, it would be like 3 to 8. And then the next band would show up and the guy would be like, well, my drummer couldn't make it. Can you do the gig? So right. I would do until 3 in the morning. So it would be like 12 hours.
That's right. Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like 45, 50.
So you got to do some blow.
I mean, not really. It's not you have to do, but you end up doing it because the temptation.
What's
and,
it there?
And I was, you know, I was weak and I wanted to do it anyway because, you know, I was curious.
And you're young.
Yeah, I was curious. Sure.
And both fun.
Yeah, at first.
At first.
And then you caught in this loop, in this cycle.
Yeah.
The first 6 months were, I was... Of course, I felt like on top of the world because that's what you do with this substance. But then the year after, it took me a year to get out of it.
Yeah.
It took me a year to get out of it. And I don't talk a lot about it, but now I feel, you know, I'm a grown man now.
That's right.
That's right.
It was a long time ago, but, you know, I'm all right with it. It's one of the mistakes of my life, but I had to go through that to realize it was shit.
Right.
And sure. I was lucky it didn't kill me. It could have killed me because, you know.
Could have killed you, yeah.
I was playing in a band where one of the musicians was a dealer. So,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
There you go.
It's like it's non-stop products.
Yeah.
As long as you get the cash, the product is there.
Yes.
So it's hard to say no. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And luckily I met some great guy that took me in their band. Those people were amazing. I was the only white guy in the band. People will show up at the gig, touch their skin, look at me like, what's going on with that band? The only white guy is the drummer, usually it's the singer or the keyboard player, you know, it's not the drummer. And that's how much I felt. Right. They opened their home to me, you know, they took me around in the neighborhood saying, this white dude is the Frenchie, so he's with us, he's cool.
Right,
you know, and it was awesome. They took me, I played with them. They helped me to clean off, you know, and they gave me a key to the home. And I was like, you know, I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. We would pray, you know, in circle before each gig. I mean, I never felt I tried, but I never felt it.
Right.
But still,
right.
You know, I took the love.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
You take the love.
Yeah, because,
right.
You know, they were like,
it's good intentions.
Yeah, yeah. And they knew what I was feeling. I was honest about it. And they knew. They didn't care. They
were awesome. Of course. Right, yeah. Exactly.
So, you know, that was the last 6 months. So it was. I ended up, you know, with the hooray or a big firework, what I came for. I play music 6 hours a day, be with some lovely people, and I was clean as pure water.
You know? And then you were ready to go home. What was the impetus for going back home?
It felt right.
Yeah.
I was tired.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're illegal, you got no bank account, you don't exist.
Yep.
So almost 3 years of that, plus all I've been through, I was tired.
Yeah.
You were.
But at least you went out on a hurrah, big bang.
It was great. I felt at peace, you know, I was like, now I can go. I'll be back.
You didn't go home with your tail in between your legs.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, now I got what I came for.
Exactly.
You know, playing music with the guy that love the music, they love me, I love them.
So you're back home in France for 12 years. right?
No, actually, I was back, and after 3 months, I was depressed. Right. You know, you play 6 days a week, and you come to France, and you play like six gigs a month.
Right.
Because you're out of the system.
Right.
And then I was lucky, a friend of mine knew this guy in England, Otis Grand, that had a blues big band. I had a French drummer. It was looking for a French drummer. So I was playing in a Cognac Blues Festival, and a friend of mine saw me and called him and said, I got the guy for you. So that guy calls me. After 3 months, I'm like, I'm going to kill myself. I'm in France. I don't know what to do. Because, you know, the music scene was poor. I was in Bordeaux. It's not New Orleans, you know. I was spoiled.
Right. Sure.
I was living on Carlton. Every Tuesday I would see The Rebirth and then John Cleary and then, you know, Walter Wolfman Washington. And then I go,
it's like,
Is it like, do you want to play? There's a fun jam. I'm like, oh my God, this is a disgrace. And no offense to them, but you know, it's not New Orleans. And this guy called me, he said, do you want to come to London play with me? Mm. I just said, yes. He said, wait, you don't know I'm coming. Put my drums in my car. I drove to London. He had a house for me in the backyard of his house. He had like a rehearsing room with a bedroom.
Wow, nice.
And here I was in England.
Now, why you said that he had a French drummer and he wanted a French drummer?
Yeah, because
why did he want a French drummer?
Because he didn't like the way the English drummers groove. And I don't care. I will
come on,
say it
come
again.
On. There's some great English drummers, right?
Yeah, but they don't groove.
They don't
groove black music. They groove blues rock.
Blues rock, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Bonham is great, but he's not funky.
Right.
And he wanted a little bit of funk, add some funk to his shuffle and his swing.
Right. Gotcha.
So he thought I had it, so I was pleased, because then I ended up touring Europe with him.
Wow.
You know, suddenly I'm back on the track.
Nice.
I've been how you say that?
Blessed,
thank you.
Yeah.
Because I was at the right time at the right moment. Or I gave enough, so I don't know. Yeah. I hope it's not just luck.
Well, you create your own luck and your own blessings, I think, you know?
Yeah.
By showing
maybe.
Up and by
Yeah, yeah, and just working hard, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
I did all those gigs, and even if I didn't like them, I was like, I gotta work, I gotta do it right and properly.
Yeah. Play. Lucky coincidences, come on, Spencer, don't happen if you don't put in the work, if you're not showing up, and if you're not good at your craft.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe it's that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I mean, you might get laid at a bar, you know, as a lucky coincidence.
But still you showed up.
Without really that much work.
You showed up.
That can happen sometimes.
Yeah,
you know.
You coiffed your hair.
Right.
Ironed your shirt.
You put a red shirt. Yeah.
So I'm just getting around here, but so the regulations are a little bit different then, right? Like it was okay for you to be in England and work.
Yeah, because it was Europe.
Because it was Europe, yeah. Right? Yeah. And and they were full EU at that time. Even
yeah.
They're trying to exit now, right? So silly, right?
Let me start.
I know. It's terrible this way. Hey, here's to France, by the way. For getting the world off of the wagon train of the far right crap movement. Yes.
Fucking right.
Dude. Yes.
Yes.
Big round of applause
for the French.
For the French. Thank you.
For once.
Yes. We needed that.
Yeah, the French are standing up in the world right now.
I'm not sure we won anything out of that.
Yeah.
It's like we didn't get the worst.
Yeah, you didn't get the worst.
But now we get, you know, the swamp is not.
You didn't lay over and get ass fucked.
But that guy is all for the money. So.
Yeah,
you'll see.
Yeah.
I got you. So it's not like you got a progressive.
No,
no. I heard that as well.
Yeah. Right.
It's this guy. This guy is pretending. I'm no left. I'm no right. But 2/3 of his government.
But that's like
right.
But that's like if we would have gotten Hillary. You know?
Yeah, it's exactly
it's like
same.
That, you know? And it's like,
exactly
we
same.
Would all have a giant party if Hillary was the president right now,
yeah.
You know? Just to be relieved.
That was just a relief.
Yeah,
Then we didn't get the extreme right. But now, reality is going to hit.
yeah, right. Realities.
Oh yeah,
yeah, sure. Reality is gonna set in. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. So then, did you stay in England for some time, or?
Yeah, well, that guy was insane that I played with.
It was, right.
I won't develop that, but he was so insane. I mean, it's public. I don't care now. He's not gonna.
What's he gonna listen to our podcast?
No, I mean, what I mean is not gonna burn me. It's just,
yeah. What's
you know,
he gonna do?
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't like to, you know, to talk publicly.
Talk shit.
Yeah. About yeah. people. If he knows, he knows.
He knows. It's
but he was such a shit guy that bass and drums, we left the day before a gig. The night before a gig, we called him. We said, we're not coming tomorrow. He's like, what do you mean? No, we hate you.
Rock and roll.
I mean, he stole money. You gotta do that every now and then.
He stole money.
Stole money. Yeah.
Shit like that. You know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, right. So fucking.
Yeah.
He's an asshole.
Fuck
he's that. A, he's, yeah. He fucked so many musicians over that somebody had to do something. And yeah. The bass player became one of my best friends. He was here last month, actually. He visited from Brighton.
Oh, nice.
Super upright bass player. And we were like, we had enough. Let's just go.
Right, right.
And we just had this idea of, oh, you fuck with us? You're gonna feel what it feels.
Nice.
And it was fun, man. It was so much fun. That the good. Night we were supposed to play, we had a great party and restaurant, and because we felt free.
You sometimes know. You have to do that. You can't let the assholes rule.
Yeah.
God, you know what? It feels great for like. You get like a day and a half or two days, man, where you're like, yeah, fucking A.
Yeah, and then you go.
Killed it.
You get on with your life.
And they're like, okay, man, I gotta find
a
job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the good thing is the keyboard player I knew, I was playing with in that band, knew this guitar player, Matt Schofield, not John Schofield, Matt Schofield with an H, S-C-H-O. Awesome guitar player. He has been voted in the top 10 of all time guitar players in England. He's pretty big in England in the blues scene. And we became friends. I ended up playing with him, and I played with him for the next 10 years or so, on and off. I did an album with him. I did tours.
Wow.
And so it went for the best, you know? It was awesome.
Dude, good for you.
Yeah.
That's great.
It was like a trio, you know, guitar, drums, and organ.
Wow.
And it was funk, blues, New Orleans.
A little bit.
A mix between English blues and New Orleans funk, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
And it was awesome.
What was the name of that?
Matt Schofield. Matt Schofield Band.
Matt Schofield Band.
Yeah, with the Nage.
Okay.
Awesome guy.
Is any of that music online?
Yeah. And now he lives in, it's so funny, he lives in Florida now.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I moved to America, so did he. And actually, the day, 10 days after I got my green card, he was playing in New Orleans.
Wow.
And I got to jam with him. It was awesome. It was like...
That's
kicked. What's his name from the Meters, the bass player?
George Porter.
Yeah, was there.
Yeah.
So he's one of my...
Just checking you guys out.
Yeah, and he just showed up, and Matt was like, will you jam with us? I'm like, oh, of course I will. Great. And I go on stage and say, oh, by the way, look who's here. And I tell him, it's George Porter, one of my heroes. And I get to play with George Porter. I had my visa on my wife's birthday.
When was this?
That's cause to celebrate.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nice. Well done.
My wife was on tour. She dances with Off Montreal. It's a pop band.
Okay.
Based in Athens.
Okay.
And she does, did put costumes and all that. She was on tour, and I'm like, we need to Skype now. She's like, I can't. I'm like, believe me, we need to Skype. And then she opened, and I had the visa in my hand.
Nice.
And I said, happy birthday, my love. And nice. 7 days later, I was in New Orleans. I was like, bye, everyone.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I had some interesting coincidences like that.
Yeah. Huh. So you moved here 5 years ago, and
I mean, I didn't. I've been here for 5 years. I usually say that because it's easier.
Right.
But when I met her, then I came. I came back every 3 months.
I gotcha. Right.
Because that's all you can do when you don't have a green card.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You can't, as with the tourist visa, you can spend 3 months, but then you have to go home 3 months.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah. 3 months of solitude. Then you come back and you leave 3 months. So luckily I was a musician. I could do that. I could have my gigs.
Sure.
I was like, guys, okay, we're touring for 3 months and then I'm not here for 3 months.
Right.
And then I would go back. So.
And you were able to work that out musically.
Yeah. But I had some savings. Mm-hmm. I don't anymore.
Don't anymore.
Yeah. I mean, 3.5 years of
long business relationship.
Upcoming and
It's a
fortune.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I don't care.
So you got your visa about 18 months ago?
It was December the 3rd, 2015.
Nice.
So now you know my wife's birthday.
That's right.
All right.
I hope you will remember.
I will remember December 3rd.
You need me to take a note of that, Joel?
Yes.
And so now, who are you playing with now, around now?
When I moved here, I was out of the scene, so I got no connection, and I had to make a living. So I worked with Simon of New Orleans, the painter, does the signs, and he did the set.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He did the set for News with a Twist.
Yes,
on that.
Right.
Yep, yep.
So my wife was painting with him, so she got me hooked up with him, and I would work with him. And then it wasn't enough, so I started to work in a kitchen. Actually, I work at Cherry Coffee, awesome place. Awesome coffee. It's on Laurel and Opaline. I recommend it.
Huh. Okay.
There's like a baseball field or dogs.
Oh, I know it.
Yeah.
Oh no, and there's the Grits Bar. It's right there, catty corner.
It's a yellow building.
Right.
It used to be a
fire. I know
fire.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome food of some people, of some coffee.
Yeah.
And so I would do that, and then I get tired because I'm too old to cook. To starting cooking at 45 is too old. It's too old.
Right.
Especially when you send 110 in a kitchen.
Yeah.
And then I got a job as a barista at Joel's Cafe. At Jules Work.
At the Contemporary, I'd say.
Jules Cafe, ladies and gentlemen.
At the CAC.
Also known as the CAC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love
it. So that's how I ended up. Yeah, that's the whole story. But I do a few gigs once in a while. I got a few coming.
Okay. Yeah, what do you have coming up?
I forgot the names. I'm going to check that.
And while you're doing that, I'll say that I don't know if you know this about me, but when I worked at the CAC 20 years ago, and I created.
Yeah, you told me that.
So, but did I tell you that I started in the cafe as a barista? Horrible barista. I had no idea what I was doing with coffee. They hired me because I was a bartender, and they wanted to be able to serve drinks.
Yeah.
So they wanted to introduce a bar because they didn't have drinks at the time. So, but I still had to make coffee, and I sucked at it. Like, I couldn't figure out how to get the milk with the froth the cappuccino.
Steaming the milk.
Yeah, I just couldn't do it. I got nervous. I started sweating. You know,
plus, you have shaky hands, too.
I will have shaky hands.
Yeah.
I have early onset Parkinson's.
Man, that's the worst combination for a barista that I've ever heard.
It's good for whipped cream.
It's good for whipped cream.
It's good for whipped cream. So, if I had to steam some milk, I would have to take a shot of tequila to steady my nerves.
Oh, boy.
And then,
you'd be all right.
And then I'd be, no. But the cafe sucked back then, man. It was an internet cafe.
Yeah.
It was one of the first internet cafes in the city. And the internet was still like dial-up. It was super slow. And you just had all people didn't have internet at home. So you just got the worst of the worst people coming in. And it was just awful. And aesthetically, it was bad. So I come back in December of this last year to help Barbecue Dave out with this like construction disaster that was happening. And I had not been at the CAC in years. And I was walked into the cafe. And I was like, holy shit, this is cool. And they've got great food and great coffee. And they've got this bookstore. Jeff, they've got, did you see the bookstore?
No.
It's amazing, dude.
No.
It's maybe the coolest bookstore I've been in.
Yeah,
it's like, I never want
to. It's a nice little bookstore.
Oh, yeah. She's got some amazing books in there.
It's phenomenal. It's like, I'm never going to go anywhere to shop for gifts for family and friends or whatever again. I mean, there's something for everyone.
Yeah.
And they've got like a couple of copies of everything, you know? But it's so wonderfully curated.
Yeah.
And then the food seems wonderfully curated as well. It just seems very thoughtful, you know? I don't know how much you had to do with that But it's just really lovely and nice. And
well, that's Emily that chose the yeah. recipes.
Yeah.
Then I'll make it.
Yeah. It's good quality stuff. Yeah. It's very it's artisan. I would
say. She used to do some pop-ups.
Yeah.
And all that. She's got some good ideas. Great ideas.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
And the little signs, the signs that you guys do in the morning up front, the little chalkboard sign, just it's always kind of charming.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually my favorite part of the CEC. Don't tell the visual arts curator or the performing arts curator, but the cafe is my favorite programming part of the CEC. Oops.
We're blowing up here, Joel. You know that, man. So like,
that's right.
We're gaining local audience exponationally, man. That's so true. Eventually,
the word is going to get out.
The word is going to get out. Exactly. Someone's going to hear it.
What are we at on time right now?
30 minutes right now.
Cool. So, Lon, I wanted to talk to you about the Kid Koala thing. Because I just I thought that was so nice. Oh, so, Kid Koala, my first week on the job, I was pinch hitting in performing arts before I started my real job, which is in hospitality. So, I just did the front of house production for Kid Koala. And it was an amazing show. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. Jeff, you shot video at the rehearsal. I mean, you can speak to it.
Well, yeah, we talked about it on the podcast when, as it was going down, and I just thought it was one of the most interesting live integrated performance concepts that I had seen in a long time. You know, the idea of doing puppets live as though it was like the American Theater Playhouse from the early 50s on a screen, and everything's being edited together by a director who's backstage. But you also, as the audience, get to see not only the giant screen, which has the finished product on it, there's a live band that's doing the score, and they know all the cues, and they're right on time. And you get to see the set, which is in front of the bleachers where you're sitting. You know,
it's in between the bleachers and the stage where the band is.
And the stage where the band is.
And the screen is behind the band.
Right, and Kid Koala is up there. It's a band that, it's classical instrumentation, like a chamber orchestra, not chamber orchestra, but like a chamber group. But then there's Kid Koala, who has keyboards and all kinds of electronic ukuleles and all
kinds of turntables,
all kinds of electronic instrumentation,
percussion
and sound effects,
yeah,
just queued up, and he knows exactly where they go
he
does these voices as well through these like vocal processors to make his voice sound, the vocoder, and so he's got like a robot voice, and he does some other things as well. And just everything about it from top to bottom was super creative.
There's only about 150 words of dialogue in the whole thing.
I'll tell you what I was most impressed by was, this sounds so mundane, but what they call in filmmaking blocking, you know, so that just means the movement of the characters and the timing,
yeah,
you know, because it's so they did some things that were comical at one point when the robot with the many arms is chasing after the outdated robot. Yeah. It's a turnstile that has a set built onto it, and that's how anytime the robot was walking outside in the cityscape, that's how they would do it. Yeah. And so this turnstile is going and going and going and going around, and then the other robot's about to attack the outdated robot. He comes up behind him, and then the hero turns around, but then the robot's gone. And he doesn't see anything, and so it's kind of this Laurel and Hardy kind of thing. But then suddenly it's in an alleyway, right? You remember this part, right? It's in an alleyway, and so the turnstile has to be stopped just so. It has to be slowed down just to a rate that you see that alleyway, which passes every rotation of that turnstile, and it passes just slow enough that you see that he's hiding in the alleyway now. And then the many-armed robot has to stop and then go back.
Exactly.
But this is the thing, folks, that it's not stopping and going back. The robots are just sitting there. Mm. So the turnstile, the set is moving, and the robots are in the same spot. And so they have to reverse it and move it back. The timing to make the comedy happen in that scene is exquisite. you have to be on time to make that go. And I was super impressed with that.
I was talking to an amazing amount of rehearsal. I was talking to Eric after the show, who's Kid Koala, and just about some of those things, and as well as the Brian, the road producer. And they said that they basically pulled out every filmmaking, like cheap filmmaking 101 trick in the books. Like, that's what they did. They were like, if you took a 101 filmmaking class at UCLA, we just did every single trick that you learned.
Oh, totally.
And that's it.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, the camera moves are just amazing.
Totally.
Same.
Yeah.
Same, because it's so precise, because it's so tiny.
Yeah.
The slightest move.
Then something's out of focus.
Yeah, exactly.
And they went for that, too. Yeah. You know, it's like they didn't say, let's have, they couldn't have had a wider lens, but you could have poured in more light, and you could have had, like, you could have gone to, like, F11, you would have had more depth of field. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. They just said, let's get the lighting right, and let's get the cinematography, the videography right, and we'll get the moves right and the blocking. Yeah. And
so it's all about the puppeties.
And it's all about knowing where it needs to be.
Those puppeties was amazing. They were amazing. Actually, it's funny because a couple, two of the puppeties are a couple. Oh, I'm going blank.
That's the reason I brought this up, because like 3 days later, I go into the cafe and Alan was like, oh, yeah, I can't remember the guy's name either.
It's Karina. Karina.
Karina is the wife.
And, I will find it.
Yeah, we'll look it up. Yeah. And you were like, oh, yeah, they extended their stay, because I was doing the ground transportation thing. And so at some point, I learned that those guys weren't leaving. No, they were like, they were extending their stay. Yeah. And I didn't think that much of it.
Yeah.
And then, like, 3 days later, Alan tells me that they checked up with him.
Yeah, because one of the puppeteers came to me in the cafe and was like, do you know anywhere where I can stay? Because I'm here with my wife. His wife wasn't part of the show, wasn't manipulating the puppets.
Right.
But she's one of the people that created them.
She
was there at the beginning.
Right.
And they were there both. He was there. He was part of the show. But she was there because they had their two kids also. Mm. So they were taking the opportunity to stay two or three more days.
In New Orleans. Right.
And they said to me, well, we don't like to go. We could go to an hotel, but we don't like it. We'd rather stay with people or whatever. Do you know anyone? And my wife was, again, on tour. Like, well, I got a room in my house. So the couple, the two kids, just stayed in my home. I had like inflatable beds and stuff. Yeah. So
good.
Two of them were sleeping in the bedroom, in a second bedroom, and two in the living room.
Nice.
And I took them on the Sunday. I took them Sunday morning. I took them to a gospel church.
Wow.
A Baptist gospel church. Mm-hmm. It was awesome, with a choir and everything. And then in the afternoon, there was a second line.
Right.
And Eric came too.
He did. Oh, good. Because I was at that second line.
Oh, you were there.
I implored him to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I missed you there.
Yeah.
So I was there with them. And at the same time, I had two people. That's an amazing story. A friend of mine shows up on the Wednesday. He's like, he calls me. He's like, I'm in New Orleans. Where are you? I'm like, what the fuck? Can't you let me know in advance?
No. And he's like,
I didn't know. For his 30th birthday, his wife bought him a ticket because they got a baby. Mm. And she was like, I can't go with you. I had a knock.
Is someone knocking?
I think someone knocked.
Someone might be knocking at the door right now. This is just the way that it is at the It's a Good Life Babe podcast.
Should I get on with my story?
We get people at the door sometimes. It's Rich BK.
Pull up a
stool. He's there. OG producer.
The original OG producer.
Hey, man.
Nice. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
Hey, Dan.
All right, good to see you. Have you guys met before?
No, I don't think so. Hey.
This is Rich.
Alan, nice to meet you.
So
my friend, my she bought a ticket. She took him to the airport in Paris, mm-hmm. and said, you know, put a few clothes. It's gonna be hot. And I'm offering you. That's my present to you for your 30th birthday. Since I can't travel, you go and have fun. And she said, oh, by the way, this is your best friend. And his best friend showed up at the airport, and she gives him a ticket. She said, you're going to New Orleans.
And wow. She,
and he's a musician and a DJ, and he's a big fan of Kid Koala. So he showed up, and I'm like, you want to see Kid Koala? I was like, are you kidding me? So we ended up.
Wow.
She was able to bring him.
Yeah, I bring him and his friend to the show. And then we ended up at the parade also and the church all together with the Canadian puppeteers.
Yeah.
It was just a crazy weekend.
Wow.
It was an insane weekend.
That's so much great. Fun.
Yeah, and they said this at home, we talked about them, about the show, how they came up with the story. Oh, my God, I can't remember the puppeteer guy name. I'm sorry, man. I will remember your name if you listen to that.
Can you look up Newphonia Must Fall?
I think I got it.
Can you look up Newphonia Must Fall?
Yeah.
And see if you can find out who's in the production.
Please, people, check this up. And his brother was one of the original dancers, gymnasts that started the Cirque du Soleil.
Wow.
So really? They're all connected.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, it's all connected.
It's all connected.
Right.
He's part of this scene. And him, same. He wasn't really into puppeteers, but he ended up doing it with his wife. And then he got caught by chance, or, you know, like we were saying, because he was working hard at the right place at the right time. He ended up with Eric, and they created the idea together. And
really?
It's funny that this is the second podcast in a row that we're talking about people who are involved with puppets, because our last guest on the podcast, was used to work on a show in a similar vein to what you're describing about the puppeteer whose name we can't remember right now. But he moved to New York, right? And he had no idea that he was going to get involved in this. And he took a job on this show that
Crank Yankers.
Called Crank Yankers. Which I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
No.
But they made prank phone calls on the show, but they used puppets on the show. It's kind of a classic show now.
Right.
Felix.
Felix. Right. Felix. Of course.
All right.
Felix and Jeez. Karina.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. We got.
I love you, Felix.
So anyway, he worked on that show, you know, and what did he do on that? He did sets.
He did sets. The sets were amazing. It's like one of those shows where the sets are part of the humor. There's like a lot of jokes in the background.
Yeah.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
No, this show would have like the best comedians in America.
Dave Chappelle
was on. All
Sarah
kinds of
Silverman,
people.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Just all the top comedians, you know. Yeah.
And they would just prank call somebody. And then once they got something that they really liked, they would create a set and puppets for the prank call.
Oh, that's cute.
And post.
Like Dave Chappelle's thing was like, they called this some hotel.
A bed and breakfast in Vermont.
Like the whitest place in America, yeah. Right? And he's playing like he's
the Wu-Tang
Clan, right?
Man,
and they're going to come, you know?
We got the drizzle. We got the... He's like, well, and she's like, she can't not be polite.
Oh, yeah.
She's like a bed and breakfast. She's like, well, can you have all 12 of us? She's like, well, we have two rooms. We'll fit in. Let me ask you, got some turntables?
When he asks if...
we have a 78, whatever.
He says something like, you smoke? You smoke? We can smoke that stuff, right? And she's like, well, the rooms are non-smoking. Oh, I got to take it outside. Right,
we can bring the bitches up in here, though, right? We can bring the bitches up in here.
Anyway, it's the last two podcasts we've had people. Well, have been
and then on just to tease an episode coming up on July 12th, we've got Doogie coming in.
Oh yeah, we got another puppet coming on July 12th as well. Yeah,
he's
getting specialized.
I know, we're becoming like a puppet.
He's a West.
I think we need a regular puppet on.
Exactly.
On the podcast.
Exactly.
You know?
Spencer, can you
You
get
can't
into that?
See that it's a puppet, but right. We're going to have a puppet.
First radio puppet.
Maybe
it's going to
be the
first radio puppet
time.
Ever.
The audience will never
Folks,
know.
Folks, on the itsagoodlifebabe.com, Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans podcast, we're going to debut the first radio puppet ever.
Podcast puppet.
That's right.
Podcast puppet.
Yeah, podcast.
A pod puppet.
Pod puppet. So speaking of radio, Alan, you said you were in a radio host for a while, yeah?
Yeah, because, I love to try anything and everything, and it's another media that's fun. I love to be, being a musician, I've been in, you know, with bands and in interviews and all that, and I love the atmosphere of this room, like we are, in a circle, microphone, and we can talk, and there's like, you know, something magical about it.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was in this local radio near outside of Bordeaux. It was called Gold FM.
Huh.
And he would do like 8 to midnight on his own. He was like, man, I'm tired. Do you want to do something with me? Because he knew I was interested. And was like, yeah, I do. You know, I do like some little interventions, you know, throughout the show, you know. I don't care. So I came up with this character named Gordon, and I will do the Flash Gordon.
Flash,
you know, right. It's the Flash Gordon.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, that's what you do.
Did you do the voice? You did voice?
No, I just did my. It was just for the joke, you know.
It was just for the joke.
Yeah,
right,
the Flash Gordon. Here, Gordon, and I would do like the, you know, the single of the week. It was weekly. Single of the week, the album of the week, you know, the show of the week.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, nice. People could win tickets because I got a few connections in Bordeaux that I could get some tickets. Sure. So it was fun. That was from 8 to 10, and then from 10 to 12, it was like disc on the songs on demand.
Uh-huh.
But since not enough people would call, we would just make them up. You know?
Right. You'd make up the calls.
Yeah, make up names and messages.
So, oh, right.
You know?
I love it.
You know, it's Steve and Paula.
That's what you do.
Yeah, yeah. You know? So it was, that was the most fun, because we would come up with the most, the funniest shit. Funny to us, he would put my parents' name, you know, and you would have private jokes. It was really interesting. It was fun nights.
So
fun
we've night. Been doing, you can maybe let us know what you think about this segment. And we're going to do this with you at some point, okay?
Okay.
We have this thing called Don't Call Us, We Call You.
Okay.
All right? So sometimes we let people know before we're going to call them. Other times we don't. We're kind of debating that right
now.
You call your mom.
Yeah.
She didn't know. That's an example of We Call You. Right. So we call you and we get you on there. I think it's been working great, man.
It's been good.
You know, it's been really good. So anyway... You know, keep your ear to the rail about the We Call You, and let us know what you think. And we're going to call you
exactly
at some point. But also, let me just say right now, we're at about 47 and a half minutes right now. So maybe we want to wrap up and come back for a part two.
And what's your time like? You want to chat a little bit more?
I'm cool.
I love it. I've got some more whiskey.
I love your company.
All right.
Likewise.
All right, good.
Awesome.
So, folks, stay tuned. Click on the next part of episode 52, and we'll be back.
It's a goodbye, babe.
.com.
Jeff and Joel Sells.
From New Orleans.
Jinx.